Like targeted allocation money you just don't know how to spend. It's That's So MLS. I'm one of your hosts, Nick Thornton, and with me, as always, is Andrew Bates. Andrew, how are you this fine evening?
I'm doing great. It is not the first snowfall, but a big snowfall here in St. John, New Brunswick. So I'm sitting, looking pensively out the window, and thinking of all the goodbyes the teams have been making in Major League Soccer, and some of the hellos they have instead.
Yes. So we're officially into silly season. Toronto has had their lovely little parade, and now we are left with several weeks, a couple of months of the off season, and things have been exciting, to say the least, so far.
It all happened very quickly because it was the day after was the half day window.
Yeah.
And there were a couple things that happened there. Expansion draft list came out. The expansion draft happened. There was almost no time at all between the end of the game and the start of the movement. What did you think of the expansion draft?
Not very exciting, to be honest. I sort of expected a little bit more movement from LAFC. But I don't know if it's just a poor memory on my part, but I don't ever recall it being quite so dramatically busy right after the final.
I think,
or maybe it's just the players involved.
In a situation where there was so much time, where there's so much time between the end of the regular season and the end of the playoffs because of that 2-week international break, mm-hmm. I think that people had their chance to. I think the teams had their chance to really like think about what they wanted to do and get moving in what I think is also like kind of strange, a half day window.
Yeah, I mean, it makes about as much sense as the targeted allocation money and general allocation money, which we'll talk a little bit about. I have no interest in trying to decode it for others or myself because it really is a bizarre way of doing things. But let's talk a bit about some of the moves that have happened around the league. One of the teams that made a lot of moves, and perhaps unsurprisingly, was DC United, who finished bottom of the league this year, had a terrible season, but in recent weeks took on the defender Frédéric Brilliant, and our good old friend Darren Maddox as well.
A lot happening quickly for DC United. What do you think of a new surroundings for Maddox?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Maddox is he's always been an okay player in MLS. I think one of the things that we've seen with him is that the system he was playing under at the Whitecaps, I don't think worked particularly well for him. That being said, one of the major criticisms of Maddox has always been, regardless of what system he's under, he struggles to just put the ball away sometimes. That being said, I don't want to bring up too much criticism against him because he put away one very nicely against the Vancouver Whitecaps this year. But for me, still seems like a bit, kind of a lot of money for a player that's only going to score 7 or 8 goals in a season. But that being said, you know, As a striker, you have other jobs to do as well. And I think he's done that quite well for Portland in that when you've got somebody like him you can put on to just run at a team and also tire out the wings a little bit, it's not a bad move. And, you know, I don't know enough about DC's playing style. I tried to pay a bit more attention to them this season of exactly where Maddox will slot in. But as we've talked about with DC, they're not a terrible team. They just sort of lacked some key pieces. I'm not sure that Darren Maddox is the answer. I think picking up the defender, Briant, who had a great, some great appearances with New York City FC, I think is a pretty good deal on their part. And that might ultimately have a more impact than Darren Maddox.
Well, I mean, the one thing to remember about DC is that they had, they were very anemic in the scoring department. As you would be when you're not doing that great, and when you finish where DC did.
Yeah.
But you pointed out that Maddox only had 4 goals in 24 games last year for the Timbers. That would have been that would have made him tied for second in team scoring on DC.
Yeah.
So, I think that if the idea is we add the, I can't remember who said this, but I remember seeing this on Twitter or some forum at some point in my early stages as an MLS fan. Somebody, a proven goal scorer, somebody who you can prove has scored a goal into a lineup that has had some issues with scoring. And specifically somebody in the case of Maddox who I would say, I don't know in Portland that he suffered for not being the focus, but in a side where a lot of the opportunities, you know, obviously there are so many more powerful attacking players higher in the pecking order than him. So I feel that this could at least be an opportunity to be focused on if that is what was missing from the Darren Maddox picture.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also Maddox has, I think especially this year, talked a little bit less and worked a little bit harder. It didn't really pay off dividends for him, but, you know, I think in past years, and granted, he's a young player, but has really talked a big game and set very high goals for himself and has fallen drastically short of those goals. This year, I felt like we maybe saw a slightly more mature Darren Maddox, which, as you pointed out, he was that much further down the pecking order. I would imagine with DC, though, it's going to be similar in that he's likely being brought in as a third striker rather than a first or second striker, given DC's existing lineup, and indeed if they're wanting to make other moves. I think one of the things that I'm trying to keep in mind is that most of the moves that have happened recently are kind of the only ones that could happen in such a short time frame. We're going to see lots more movement over the coming months. There was just this very short window of time. Teams had been tracking players and didn't want to lose out, and so had to make quick decisions and move money around, etc., quickly, rather than track a player and really, really build a core of the squad.
Mm-hmm. Pieces are just shaking loose a little right now. The draft is coming up at the end of January,
yep.
So that'll be a big impact on what teams choose to do. Have you heard anything? Speaking of Vancouver Whitecaps attacking midfielders who moved on to try to secure starting roles in other clubs, have you heard much out of Kudamana these days?
You know what? I have. And for a while, so Columbus sent him to, I believe, a Bundesliga 2 team on trial. He came back without a contract.
Yes.
All I know is from his Instagram, he's currently back home in Texas. It seems like there might be talk of some teams in Europe that are interested. However, it also seems like there seems to be a lot of talk, at least amongst Columbus fans, that they'd like to see him return. I'm not sure exactly of his contract particulars, but I think a lot of Columbus Crew supporters found him to be a serviceable super sub. Maybe not a ton of production, but again, I think sometimes strikers and attacking players are judged very harshly on their output, but you don't always see the work off the ball that pulls defenders off of your main strikers. And I think Kakuta Mane played that very well this season by, you know, taking attention off of the Justin Merrims and the Higuains and the Ola Kamaras, was able to actually create some space up front, even if he wasn't necessarily the guy putting the ball in the back of the net.
I think that it is instructive for Vancouver and Vancouver's fans that that there is a little bit of a pattern of when these young players are coming up, a certain amount of expectations being put on them, which brings us to Alphonso Davies.
I kid. Sorry, that's not a knock to Alphonso Davies. I'm mocking the immense pressure and focus that has been on the kid all season long.
So this is a little bit more on the garbage trade side of things, but the rumors were, I think, that he had been invited to a tryout with Manchester United, and the club decided to, I think, send him to the national team instead.
So here's the information that I have, is apparently the offer was to train with the Manchester United youth team. And the Whitecaps, and I think rightly, made the case for, like, well, why would we send a player to a team for free and risk injury if they're not actually interested in giving the kid a contract? And I was having this conversation with a fellow Whitecaps supporter, is that does it really do much for a player's confidence to go into a highly competitive environment, even the Manchester United youth team, and see how you stack up against them? And I think that it's fair to say Alphonso Davies, I don't think, is up to the task right now. I think if anything, you look at securing him alone, where he's actually going to be playing some significant minutes, training into a certain system, and the club is going to get some money for it. But just to send him for free to a youth team clinic where, you know, he might just have his ass handed to him and come back even more lacking confidence than he was after the Gold Cup, I don't see where the real benefit is there. But what do you think?
I think for your average player, the benefit of sending a player over to Europe, if they're not necessarily, you know, have as much potential, is that sometimes young players get the thought of Europe in their head. Yeah. You know, like, oh yeah, I'll go to Europe, I'll have a great time, I'll totally kick all their butts over there, and then they arrive and find out, wow, this is a lot of work. This is a lot of work, and it's very hard, and everybody over here is very good. And so it's good for a certain class of player to ground them. I don't think Davies is that kind of player, because as much as, you know, you've got to temper the expectations, some of those goals are achievable for him. So it's not the same as wanting to sort of cool the pies of some hotshot.
No, I totally agree. I think you're right, and I think that people, as much as this is now becoming a cliche, people still do forget the kid is 17. And the reality is, he might be 24 or 25 before he's ready to go over to Europe. Is that just because we have, you know, these rising stars, we want to see them achieve everything right away? And you don't want to hold them back, and I don't think the Whitecaps is trying to hold anybody back, as we've seen with the loan moves they've made more recently with Hurtado, and he was in Sweden, I believe, or Norway, and then with Sam Adekube in England, and really seeing the benefits of those loans. Now, the difference is those players are not your marquee standout youth team players, but we're given an opportunity to train and to play in a much more competitive atmosphere over in Europe. And I think that those were the cases where you saw that environment worked really well for them and was an eye-opener. Sam Adekube has always been a good player, and he's stepped in for the Whitecaps any number of times at left back and done well, but has made a lot of simple mistakes and maybe been a little bit cocky. And it's clear that playing in England sort of straightened some of that out, that he's a much more clever player than he was when he went there, and is using his brain a little bit more than just his speed and his ability to tackle. He's also seems to have developed a little bit of discipline over there. Hurtado was the same way. Hurtado was always a fast player, always a player who liked to get up front, but you saw when he came back from Europe, there was a little bit more focus on just playing his game rather than trying to score every single time. He was being smarter about which plays he was making. He looked like he dropped about 10 pounds, if not more. He came back much fitter. And I think that's because you choose your times to send players out and the age at which you send them out. To send a 17-year-old to even the Manchester United Youth Club, or the Youth Academy, at this point, I really don't see where the benefit comes. I mean, even if he goes and excels, then does he come back unfocused and just wanting to leave? And if he goes and has his confidence destroyed, does he come back and is unfocused because he thinks he's crap now compared to all these other players? I don't know, and part of it is managing personalities, but I ultimately, I don't think there's much to be too butthurt about here of keeping a 17-year-old from training with a youth team and not, and like, what's the benefit of that to the team or to the player?
Yeah, you don't have the opportunity to take instruction from the senior team manager or play with the professional players. It's not much of anything.
Well, part of me went, even if he plays with the first team, when is the last time a young player learned anything from Mourinho? Anyway, that's another podcast.
If they want to get a look at them, Vancouver is beautiful in the summer, and all of their all the games are streamed online. So, so it's not hard. It's not hard to take a look at Alphonso Davies.
No, we're going kind of Whitecap centric here, but I wanted to come back to, I think probably, the biggest trade in the trade window that happened, and I think was a bit of a shock to some, was that our dear friends down in Portland dealt Darlington Nagbe to Atlanta United.
Oh, I have one thing to say before we move off of the Whitecaps.
Okay.
Brian Rowe was signed.
He was.
From LA, the LA backup. We've done a LA backup goalkeeper.
Yeah. Which. You know, it's sort of too bad. I think I'm going to try to judge him by the reactions he got from LA fans when they found out he was leaving. He seems like a genuinely quite liked person. And of course, there's going to be a lot of fans that say, oh, he's shit, you know, and he had a bad season. LA was as bad as they've ever been this season. And I don't think that can be placed on either goalkeeper. Because let's not forget how atrocious their defense was. And there's only so much you can do as a goalkeeper. I think Brian Rowe's a great signing. I think he's also a different class of backup keeper than we've had before. Paulo Tornaghi doesn't hold a dear space in my heart for his years put into the Vancouver Whitecaps for very little reward, but we've often had a backup goalkeeper that really hasn't played much. And
except when it was Stefan Marinovic, the goalkeeper he told you not to worry about.
Yeah. Just another Becky from the block. Yeah, and I think it's a pretty tasty treat to have two goalkeepers like Marinovic and Rowe battling for minutes. I think Rowe will likely take a back seat, but you have to remember he's got the MLS experience and he's a little bit older as well. And so it actually does make for some pretty good competition, as well as just safety knowing that you've got a goalkeeper that's a known entity that is tested, that's going to stay sharp and focused and can come in. He has been a backup goalkeeper before. He knows what he needs to do. So I think it's a good signing. It's maybe not a marquee one that you can get too excited about, but I think right now, aside from the brief window of time in which we had Osted and Marinovic, and Osted wasn't playing at all, a Rowe-Marinovic combination, I think, is a pretty tasty treat and a pretty solid goalkeeper team.
Hey, I was rooting for Spencer Ritchie, but he's down in Cincinnati getting minutes, and I can't complain much about that.
No, and the reality is it's very hard for a young goalkeeper in MLS. Columbus Crew accepted. It's very, very hard. Well, and I guess Alex Bono is not too old as well. But it's difficult in the league, right? You're up against some brilliant strikers, and you need some of that experience. And Spencer Ritchie will get his time. Make no mistake about it. I think he's got a bright future in MLS. You know, it's probably not going to come off for him for a couple of years. But it's better to have him playing and getting minutes and sharpening that craft so when the time comes he's ready, than to have a very good keeper sitting on the bench.
That makes sense. And now I'm sorry to step all over your Nagby transition.
Are we doing it now? Are we going to... Man, the Cascadia rivalry is coming out in you tonight. You did not want to talk about that. Now I don't even... You know what? Now I don't even have anything to say about it. Yeah, perhaps one of the biggest moves of the short offseason so far is Portland has traded Darlington Nagby to Atlanta United. Portland received $650,000 in general allocation money, $100,000 in other general allocation money. Apparently this is from MLS.com as well, so this is the official word. So $750,000 of general allocation money plus $300,000 in targeted allocation money and $600,000 in future TAM, I'm just going to call it now, based on Nagby's performance with Atlanta United and a 2018 international roster slot. So Portland received quite a bit for Mr. Nagby. I wanted to know what your thoughts were. He has been arguably one of the most consistent connectors and great players for Portland. What do you think of the move for either team?
It's a really interesting one in its timing because it came at a time when Portland was lacking a head coach.
Yeah.
Nagby is definitely, I would say that it's kind of like a question because of the strength of players like Addy and Valeri, who is going to be the leader, and if somebody is going to, you know, put out, if somebody's going to put money on the table, like Atlanta have done, which amounts all told to, you know, a maximum of $1.65 million in gamma TAM, which again, can't stress this enough, is not real money. It's not additional money. It's not money in anyone's bank account. It's buying back against salary cap, so it's kind of a spend, but it's not really a spend in that it's not money that you can spend on things. But it is a significant chunk of change. Although, again, the six hundred thousand in TAM is apparently tied to some pretty lofty goals, like winning MLS MVP or winning MLS Cup.
Hmm.
Well, not impossible.
It's not impossible. I do think it signals a certain intent from Atlanta United, because admittedly, in the offseason, I was kind of like, well, or not in the offseason, but when Portland went out of the playoffs, I kind of went, well, or sorry, when Atlanta went out of the playoffs, it's like, what else do they need? And I sort of thought a little bit more, I think they need like a really, really strong center back. They have really good center backs, but somebody just with a little bit more MLS experience and calm and poise, and then somebody that can act as a little bit more of a central defensive midfielder. It still seems like the verdict is out whether Almiron stays or he goes. Lord knows there's enough interest in him from any number of teams. But at first I was like, Nagby, Atlanta, does that really make sense? They're a very fast attacking team. Nagby's a very gritty, dig-in central midfielder. You know, he can be the connector. He can defend. He can attack. And then I kind of went, this is the perfect trade for them. It makes a ton of sense. I don't know, as I'm sure nobody does, how well Nagby will do, but it makes sense to give him a bit of a change of scenery. He's been at Portland for a long time, and it gives Portland the opportunity to look for maybe something a little bit different. I think Portland has achieved as much as they can achieve with their current squad and are looking to move into a different era, maybe be a little bit more creative. And Nagby's a great player, but he's not amazing. And I think with those players that are very, very good, you need to shake it up every now and then and see if, and just give them a change of scenery. So I personally think it's a fantastic signing for Atlanta. You know, and I know, as you pointed out, it's not real money, but I think it signals their intent of, they are a club that's looking to win MLS Cup, and they're putting together a squad that looks like they can do it. Certainly there are times this season where it looked like they could do it. So I think it makes sense.
Nagby's 27. He's not that old. Mm-hmm. His top scoring year, 9 goals in 2013, is 5 years in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not a bad look for him.
No, and he's never really been an out and out goal scorer. I don't think that's why they're bringing him to Atlanta. And I really just think now it's on his shoulders. Like, it's up to Nagby to take the opportunity, because the next 2 years could and should be career defining for him in terms of coming into his prime, really establishing himself, staying fit, and being that sort of talisman and connector for Atlanta that they're hoping he will be. I think he's always just sort of fallen short of what the expectation was for him, and we'll see. Another big trade that happened, coming back to Canada though, was Laurent Simon to LAFC from Montreal. And I wanted to know what you thought about that trade.
So, I think Simon is all right. I confess to not being the most immediately, not having the biggest idea of what his, of how his season was last year.
What you're trying to say is nobody really cares about Montreal Impact.
Well, I mean, like what's interesting about the Impact of their young players, and Simon wasn't that, and they made a move to get rid of to move a 32-year-old on defense.
Yeah.
For an exciting Canadian attacking player, and who is the other player that was they got in Columbus's defender Yuka Raitala. Which is a good, you know, it's good to, I think that definitely if you are the Impact heading into this expansion draft and you could somehow come out of it with Raheem Edwards, I think you've done a good job.
I agree.
It's a brutal game. MLS. Nobody seems to have a particular interest in making sure players are told ahead of time that these sorts of moves are being made. And
yeah.
I think that it makes a lot of personnel sense for the Impact to move Laurent Simon. It was the time. I wish they could have done it a little gentler on him. That was my main.
Yeah, but. Yeah. If I've learned or relearned anything this season, it's that, soccer is always a brutal business, and I think MLS gets a bad rap because it never seems to be apparent what the rules are or how a player can move or how a player can be traded, and it does sort of feel very cloak and dagger and a messenger in the middle of the night, and then a player's just gone, but then they, like, get traded from the team they just got traded to another team. Soccer is like this, though. It's not, North America is not the only league where this happens. If anything, though, I feel like it's a little bit more out of the player's control, and I agree. on a practical level, I think it makes sense that Montreal is making this move, and I hope for them it's a signal of intent to not go, and I mean, I'm going to say this, and I know that the player that comes to mind is going to make everybody think I'm an idiot, but to go a little bit younger with their squad and take a few more chances, because they've relied heavily on some older players who are great, but just cannot be expected to carry the full burden of the team. If one of those players is Ignacio Piatti, then it's a pretty good bet to make on, because he's a fantastic player. But, it may be a bit of a shock move, and if anything, biggest of all to the player. But as you pointed out, to receive Raheem Edwards is, I think, an excellent prospect. And I feel like Montreal is a team that can actually make use of him and hopefully have the kid see more minutes.
I think so, yeah. He was not, as much as he's always been sort of an interesting future piece for Toronto FC, he was on the fringes this year.
Yeah.
And never sort of...
Fairly so. I mean, he had a number of other people ahead of him.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, that's what happens when you're playing, when you're a young player trying to break into the team that ends up being the champions. But I think that because of the talent at the top of Toronto, unfortunately, despite the fact that he's like that he has some real potential, I think that they are on to the next one already. They've signed a homegrown player out of TFC2.
Yeah.
Other people can fill that spot, and in the end, it's best to get games.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and I hope. I hope he does well in Montreal. I think Montreal needs a shake-up. I feel like they're getting one, and I hope that, you know, Montreal has been, I think, one of the better teams at actually having Canadian players and playing them. And, you know, the moves they're making, maybe at least so far, you're not going to look at Montreal and go, oh, they're going to be the major title contenders next year. But they've had two pretty good seasons in a row, and... You know, my hope is that if Montreal is going to be the only Canadian team that's really giving Canadian players a chance, then more power to them. And I wish all the players the best of luck that they play. But they've done very, very well at playing Canadian players.
That is true. Not a lot of movement for Toronto.
No. Get rid of them all. Let's try again next year without Giovinco, Altidore, and Bradley, and Bono, and... Oh, actually, you know what? Keep everyone. Just keep everyone.
Time to blow it up.
Time to blow it up. One sort of surprise... Well, not surprise, I guess, but I wasn't sure about the future of Drew Moore and whether or not he'd be moving on. And I thought it was kind of nice that the club recognized the work he's put in and kept him around. So there is a player that I think a lot of people were expecting might move, but is actually re-signed with the club.
In retrospect, I think you look at a move like that and say that he is that they were trying to not protect as many players as they could, and not have him be on the bill at the time. Because if Moore is signed, he's a more attractive expansion draft target. If he's not signed, then what's the point? Because you could either sign him once he enters free agency, or you have to negotiate with him anyways. There's no good reason to pick him. So
yeah,
it was a deft little move.
Yeah, agreed.
It's good to see him back. I had heard through the garbage train. Shout out to the podcast I listened to that. The We Watch Wrestling podcast that uses that expression for the rumor mill. I like rumor mill too, but there are so many good ways to describe rumors.
Mm-hmm.
That Stephen Betashore may not be may not get the same luck.
Really?
He may, Well, he's just also a free agent, and they're also negotiating with him. And what I, the whisper I had heard is that that wasn't as conclusive.
Huh. Interesting. I mean, and this is why they call it silly season, because I've already, and I'm not saying this one is, but already I've given a lot of credit to certain rumors, and then you look in and you're just like, oh, there's nothing in this. I mean, there was a rumor going around that Nosa Igbor and the Whitecaps, his contract was being canceled, and it just turns out somebody had misinterpreted that they had declined his option and left him open to the draft selection. He's still under contract with the Whitecaps. Like, nothing's changed. They're still negotiating with him. He's a relatively new signing. It's going to happen because you can only protect so many players. But that was somehow interpreted as he is out, when in fact, no, he's not out. Literally nothing has changed since the end of the season. But
it's all over.
It's done. But that, yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if there is much in that. I mean, Betashur is not a cheap player for his age and his position, but that's also because he's arguably the best right back in the league. And, you know, I can understand Toronto wanting to offload perhaps some of the salary. It's hard to imagine, though, that if they offer him a pretty big pay cut, that Betashur would want to leave. I mean, ruptured his pancreas or his kidney.
I'm not sure.
He ruptured a thing in a game, kept playing, drove himself to the hospital, and like a couple of months later was back on the pitch and then played the full 90 in the championship game as well. Like, the dude might be getting on in years, but he can play a full 90 minutes still.
Nobody knows what is happening at this point. I think that you're dealing with a club and a player that don't really have anything to lose. You know,
that's true.
Toronto's an attractive destination, and you know, if they can't sign their free agent right back, there are other things that they can do about it. Mm-hmm. And Betashur just proved that he could be on a championship team. So which side needs the other one more? I feel like if they can come to an agreement, that both of them could maybe find a better deal elsewhere. But they've certainly been a good fit since Betashur arrived.
Absolutely. I honestly think, and I'm a little bit biased here, I don't think there's a system in many MLS teams where Betashur wouldn't thrive, and I'd slightly disagree in that I think Betashur has the upper hand here. Yes, he's an expensive right back. Yes, he's a little bit older, but you know, he's obviously been central to the team, both in terms of his leadership on and off the pitch, and the fact that he is, if he's not the best, he's certainly the most consistent right back in MLS, and that is what you need. And it's very hard to imagine a world where you just let that go. I got the reason why the Whitecaps didn't re-sign him, because his salary was so high and they wanted to free up money elsewhere. But then look at what happened afterwards, not just because of the moves they made for Jordan Smith and the disaster that was that year with right backs, but you know, Betashur just brings a certain calm and a certain presence, and consistency is the thing I keep coming back to. And he's maybe not the quickest player, but he's smart. He always gets crosses into the box. I feel like he's kind of got the upper hand with Toronto here. I think they do need him, because if not him, then who else? You're taking a risk on somebody else, and to get the same quality at that key position, you might just have to spend big in terms of scouting fees, in terms of signing a player from South America or wherever else. At this point, it might be fine to say, okay, so we cut his salary down to 150 grand a year, but he's going to stay, because why would Steven Betashur at this point, why does he want to go play for DC United or another team that also teams that probably can't afford him?
it'll be interesting to see what happens. I feel with TFC losing Raheem Edwards on that last pick must have just been up for some. I also don't know why expansion drafts are only 5 picks.
Yeah.
Is it the idea is supposed to be that you're drafting a team that you can use, you know, you're going to need more than 5 players?
I don't get it, man. I don't get any of it.
But I guess every team must hope that they're not going to get picked from, and then you come to the fifth pick, and every team in the league is crossing their fingers like, we're going to miss this one! And then all of a sudden you lose a hot young prospect.
Yeah.
Also losing players, Seattle lost their backup goalkeeper, Tyler Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Sporting Kansas City lost forward Latif Blessing. San Jose lost Marco Urania, which I think is big.
When did that happen? Where did Urania go?
Expansion draft, 3rd pick.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I didn't see. Somehow I missed that.
The expansion draft is really boring.
Oh, well, that'll do it.
It was really hard. Stuff happened, but it seemed not to happen.
Fair.
Like, I know I'm saying it was boring as you like learned that something you were interested in happened, but like it wasn't a public relations triumph for the league.
No, well, it rarely is. I don't know who runs these things, but okay, I didn't know that. And apparently, I don't know if the deal is done yet, but Bingham from San Jose, he was also on his way out. I don't know if the deal closed or not, but I forget where he was going. A couple of things to wrap up, because really Montreal and Toronto have kind of been a little bit quiet on the transfer front, is now going back to our friends, the Whitecaps. The ongoing saga that is David Oestead. And him being out of contract, he's been out of contract and the club has been unwilling to really negotiate except for a big cut in salary since, I think, June. Apparently now also David Oestead's been quite vocal about the fact that he's a very hard player to sign because apparently he was somehow TAM ineligible. And therefore, teams couldn't buy him. But courtesy of a couple of folks on Twitter, Brenton Walters amongst them, Whitecaps superfan, but I want to give credit where credit is due. Certainly. Apparently, the teams did not understand how they could use TAM to buy down David Oestead's contract and were either trying to bend the rules or really didn't understand how they could sign him. So David Oestead is sort of in this no man's land where he can't be signed at the moment because targeted allocation money is so goddamn confusing.
Right, because okay, so is this the deal where you can't sign a new player with TAM, you can only buy down an existing player?
I think it must be, and because of David Oestead's salary, that seems like why would you spend that much money to sign a player? However, apparently it actually isn't that complicated or wouldn't cost a team as much money as they thought. But if there's anybody out there at all, anywhere in the universe, who understands how this league works and how you can just buy a player, please let us know. David Oestead, his agent, the league, nobody really seems to understand, but I can understand Oestead's frustration that it seems very oblique to not share that information with a player and their agent of how exactly would I get traded to another team if the teams themselves don't understand how they could sign you. There's certainly no lack of interest for David Oestead's services around the league.
If you know how TAM works, call up. But also call David Oestead's agent and also call the 3 teams he tried to sign with.
Are you a victim of TAM? Call 1-800-Oestead.
If only there was a second division that believed in you know free spending outside of the salary cap.
I get what MLS is trying to do. I genuinely do. I think salary caps are important. I think parity in the league is important, and the small little note I'll add to this, although I'm 100% on David Ostad's side with this, is that you look around this week where, like, Bayern Munich has basically won the league 16 matches in. You look at the Spanish, if you look at La Liga, even the Premier League, these are not competitive leagues. There are two teams. In Premier League, it's four or five. But really, these leagues have no parity. It's not anyone can win it. It's a joke. Like, I don't get why anybody would watch German soccer. Like, what is the point? There's really only one team. Sort of two, but even then, you know Dortmund's not going to win the title. So, I get what MLS is trying to do, and I think it makes a lot of sense. It's how they're going about it that is so confusing that, you know, when players don't understand, clubs don't seem to understand, you'd hope that just the front offices would be able to make sense of all of this stuff. That could this not in some way just be simplified, and whether it be targeted allocation money or general allocation money or, like, save it for a rainy day allocation money, can we not just have a simpler system that benefits players and the clubs to know that there's some hope, that there's some clarity to it, and also some equality as well? I mean, I don't exactly understand perfectly how the NFL system works, but I believe that, like, the bottom two teams are the ones that receive more money at the end of the season to sort of try to reinvigorate them. I think something like that in MLS would work, is that I sort of feel like, not wanting to incentivize losing, but I kind of feel like, you know, give the DCs of the world a chance coming into the next year, and do they get some kind of bump? Or can we not roll all of this TAM and GAM and SPAM into one bucket?
It's just a little, it's weird. This is part of my concern with this was definitely part of my concern with the Nagby trade, is that it looks so weird when a player that does rank in the top echelons of the league can move for monopoly money.
Yeah, like, because on paper you're like, oh, it's 1.6 million for Nagby, and you're like, yeah, but it's not really. And so many of these notes that I have here, it's all draft picks. And I'm starting to wonder if anybody's going to get fucking drafted in 2019, pardon the language. I'll change that on iTunes to just say explicit.
the moment we lost our clean.
But
not that I haven't sworn a thousand times.
It's like, okay, Columbus received Mike Grella. That was a good trade. Colorado received second round pick in 2019 Super Draft. Colorado received Jack McBean. LA Galaxy received fourth round pick in 2019 Super Draft. Like, it just goes on and on and on and on. And this trading of draft picks is like, who invented this sport?
In the Super Draft, which does not have that, which does not have a great depth to it. Another important one, Dallas' Chris Seitz, free agent goalkeeper, went to Houston, which did not itself have any goalkeepers after it let Joe Willis go on a free, and it let Tyler Derrick, did not exercise the option on Tyler Derrick, who I believe continues to be suspended pending an investigation into domestic violence. So yeah. Seitz seems to be their man in the future. For a team that didn't have any goalkeepers under contract.
Yeah, one thing I will say about this whole off-season thing is the players that have been terrible human people off of the pitch seem to have not done well, which feels okay. I'm okay with this.
Right. What else do we have? I had Diego, LAFC also signed Diego Rossi, a 19-year-old Uruguayan on a Peñarol.
Mm-hmm.
At the DP.
Interesting prospect.
Minnesota's chilling. They drafted Tyrone Mears in the re-entry draft.
Okay, in fairness, I know that the dude is getting on, but He's a great player. Mm-hmm. Everyone sort of scoffed at this trade. I thought it made a lot of sense for Minnesota. Like, I don't get what the turning up of the nose is coming from.
RSL got their Liverpool loanee Brooks Lennon on a permanent deal.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Did that one happen today?
I think it was just recently. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, RSL has been a weird one that's been oddly quiet for such a sort of disappointing season and what could have been. They've really not been very active, which I thought was interesting.
Loose, it's a moment for loose. Things are shaking loose right now. Things True. Are not really being like pursued, or, you know, it's not trade deadline. The things that are not secured are moving in the aircraft. Sporting Kansas City got a DP named Johan Croizet from Belgian side KV Mechelen,
mm-hmm.
25-year-old midfielder. Perhaps the most interesting thing moving forward, Portland have hired New York Cosmos head coach Giovanni Savarese, who will be the replacement for Caleb Porter, who has had a record of success at the Cosmos with 3 trophies. And I know mostly for, there's a story in the most recent episode of issue of Howler magazine about sort of the work he put in when the Cosmos looked like they were about to fall apart last winter,
mm-hmm.
in calling all the players and letting them know after they won the championship that the club was going to disband and releasing them for their contracts and finding them new homes. And then when Rocco Commisso bought the club, calling them all back up and saying, well, actually, hold on here one moment.
God.
We do need a soccer team, so like if y'all want to come back.
Unreal.
But it speaks the way that process played out spoke really well to him as a coach. Because players really respected the amount of work that he put in to find them a soft landing.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, you know, in the piece, it's reflected that some of the players that came back wouldn't have come back for anyone else. So he's somebody who inspires loyalty from players.
I think Portland was due for a shakeup again. You know, they won MLS a couple of years ago, and I think Caleb Porter showed that he had done his work there. I know he's not the most likable person on the planet, or the most charismatic, certainly, but he's a great coach, and I'm glad that he decided to move on and do different things. And I think that it could be very exciting to see what Portland builds around the base of the team that they've created. And it makes sense. Like, you need a character coach to come in and fill some big shoes, but also put a different stamp of identity onto the team.
Mm-hmm. In the piece, it was reflected that there was no guarantee that Gio would stay on for another year. But when you also look that to replace Chris Seitz, Dallas have signed the Cosmos goalkeeper. Jimmy Maurer. This certainly doesn't look, I think the lawsuit to a certain degree from what I've seen, the NASL's lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation really depends on how long Rocco Commisso wants to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Other NASL owners are in on it too, and they certainly did say if they didn't get this injunction, they didn't get that there wasn't going to be a season, but this certainly doesn't look like a club that's ready to play in March.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really so sad. I mean, it's sad that the soccer world in North America is so fragmented, because if it was more organized, you know, there really could be some serious challenges, I think, for the World Cup and certainly even just for the market of domestic soccer. But it just seems like it's never really going to happen for it, because you've just got all these weird offshoots and, you know, clubs with great histories that can't quite get in. I mean, for me, one of the big tests will be, and I feel like it's a foregone conclusion, and so maybe it's not, because it's MLS, but I feel like if FC Cincinnati doesn't get an MLS spot, that will be a good indicator of just how far we have to go in North America to continue to develop soccer. Is that, what do you need to do to be successful? And I think it's easy to forget how much it's still the Wild West and how young MLS is, and just how fragmented these leagues are, that they really don't feed into each other. There doesn't seem to be any benefit to other leagues in North America. And you just have these weird sort of backwater teams that are good, you know? Like, you know, the fact that, you know, even some North American soccer fans even know of their existence, not just because, like, the New York Cosmos, they've been around for a while, but to know that teams like the Tampa Bay Rowdies are a team. But how come they're not really competing in any significant way in North America? And how come players coming up through that system aren't being fed into MLS more? It just seems like, really, right now, it's like players who can't get minutes in MLS get resigned to the backwaters of NASL or USL. And then we never hear from them again.
I think that the in the States, the failure of the U.S. men's national team to qualify has emboldened the proponents of promotion and relegation. That doesn't make it any more likely to happen.
No, it really doesn't.
But it's an interesting moment in terms of there are just so many markets with enough money to support soccer to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
But all of them are only really willing to put money down unless they can be in the top league.
Which makes sense. Why would you pay money to be in USL right now?
With no ceiling, or yeah. with a hard ceiling.
Yeah, like it just doesn't make any sense, and it's no wonder these leagues are struggling, because, like, what would you do it for? Like, you're just going to rely solely on ticket sales?
The frontier beyond MLS. As much as everybody was talking about TFC winning the treble, if you're really going to measure trebles, it would be a domestic treble that TFC has won, because they won three trophies, but two of them were domestic or North American Cups, whereas the CONCACAF Champions League is getting underway in February.
Shut it down.
Well, they've made it. They've unfortunately, there's been some schedule fuckery because of the fact that they've been changing things around. It's only a 16-team knockout now. There's no more group stage,
right?
Which is solid. The TFC is now, with all the confidence and you know, finesse that they've been expressed in the MLS Cup playoffs, will be able to compete against the best teams in the continent, like the Colorado Rapids, who they've drawn in the first round of the round of 16.
I mean, I know we could quote-unquote call this a transition year, but come on. Quite apart from being very excited to watch any Mexican side just cream Toronto, it's lunacy. And I kind of am at the point, and it's not just because the Whitecaps are now out of the Champions League and probably won't see it for a while to come. How do you even get in anymore? Like, what, you're in a state that starts with K? Like, I don't understand how it's been changed. And I don't, if they're trying to grow the profile of it, why is it, again, so difficult to understand why these teams are chosen?
I think that it's actually relatively simple now because it's, you know, you win the trophies. Canadian championship winner gets in. For 2018, it's the 2016 MLS Cup winning Seattle, because the Champions League used to stretch over 2 years. The last edition started way back in 2016.
Oh, right, okay.
With its group stage, and then the knockout rounds happened during the year, and now it's going to be all one stretch. It's going to start in February, and it's going to end with the World Cup, the World Club Championship in December.
Okay.
Which will, I think, be a little bit more continuity. But the result is a lot of the qualifiers for 2018 are all 2016 teams. So the 2016 MLS Cup winning Seattle Sounders are the qualifiers from that route. Dallas won the Supporters Shield, so they will qualify through that route in 2016. New York Red Bulls were the first place Eastern Conference team because Dallas also won the U.S. Open Cup. Or no, the first place Eastern Conference team qualified. And the
I want to go back a couple of minutes to where you said, oh, it's perfectly simple.
Well, next year is perfectly simple because it's the like US, the 2017 Open Cup. 2019 is simple because it's the 2017 Open Cup winner, the 2017 MLS Cup winner, the 2018 MLS Cup winner, the 2018 Open Cup winner, and the 2018 Canadian Championship winner.
I think they should just start with a system wherein they go, okay, 2019, if your club starts with A, you're in. Club America and Atlanta, go for it.
This is where I completely, again, contradict myself, because I made it sound all very simple, but the 2017 MLS Cup winners are Toronto, who cannot qualify via MLS. So that team will go to the non-qualifying team with the most amount of points between the 2017 and 2018 MLS seasons.
When you put it that way, it's easy. I mean, why just have a system in which the top two teams from every league join in? Oh, my God. What a nightmare.
All the MLS teams miss Mexico. Sounders are playing a Salvadorian team by the name of Santa Tecla. New York Red Bull is playing CD Olympia. Dallas is playing Taro FC.
How do they even figure that out? How is it rigged so that no team plays Mexico in the first round?
I think it's a draw. Like, it's just a draw. I think that
actual Champions League is a, and I'm doing scare quotes and also square quotes here, a draw, and you go right.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not just no, a rich exactly. man in a room sorting teams based on what's going to draw the most revenue. It's just names in a hat. Surely,
bollocks. I think the trailing team seeding wise was Colorado was the only pot two MLS team. They drew.
I would love it if Colorado just came in next year and just stormed it and won it all. That'd be amazing.
Just for some reason, Tim Howard just you know
shows up.
Throws eight sizes.
He'd have to wake up, but.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine if after everything that's happened, TFC lose in the first round to Colorado, like.
You know what? I can.
That will be the beginning of the competitive season on February 20th. It's almost 2 months away.
Well, yeah. I guess we'll all be waiting with bated breath until then.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to talk about Reyna, and then I thought, you know what? Let's not give more airtime to that than anyone needs to. But I think it's suffice to say that the Whitecaps have a situation that Jordy Reyna's been implicated in the murder of a volleyball player in his home country in Peru. And The last that I heard, and this is going on my Spanish translation, so don't hold me to this, is that he is now incarcerated pre-trial. I think, as usual, the Whitecaps are going to not say anything, and he's just going to disappear into the background. And in this particular case, I'm not sure that that's such a bad thing, because really what's to be gained by making any kind of statement? But there's been rumors swirling over the last week or so that his contract will be terminated. But certainly it looks like now, I mean, he's in jail until this thing goes to trial. At this point, it seems very highly unlikely that he will be back with the Whitecaps, which, you know, on one side you go, well, that's unfortunate because he was sort of the talisman for the Whitecaps, but also, if this whole thing turns out to be true, is a total garbage pail of a human person, and, you know?
I had no inkling that he had been, I thought, so you're saying he's in jail. I thought that he was maybe, because this is, I think, where we left it last week, that he was, like, maybe present, maybe an accessory, maybe if not literally implicated, then morally implicated by his presence.
Yeah.
But it might be more sinister than that.
The last reports that I saw from today, and some very long coverage, is that he's the spotlight of this whole crime. And it seems like it's moving towards, and again, this is from my translation of things, but I've checked it a couple of times, and I think it's mostly accurate, is that he will be incarcerated pre-trial, which, when that trial happens, who knows? But I think at the moment, it seems like he's actually unable to leave the country, and indeed, leave prison.
That is just incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks to the fact that, you know, soccer players are not immune, of course, to the rampant toxic masculinity that exists everywhere. And the Peruvian national team apparently has seemed to have taken it to new heights in the last few weeks where... you know, you want to get excited about young players and you want to get excited about underdogs and soccer stories and you want to care about the sport. But ultimately, the lives that people live off the pitch and the decisions they make affect that a great deal more. And if anything, I just feel proud of the soccer community for finally paying a little bit more attention to this and not just automatically giving players a write-off and assuming that they're innocent when we know that this is a problem in the sport. Yeah. And this is far bigger than this particular situation, but this is not the first time a player has been charged with doing something shitty. In this case, a young woman is dead. And so, for me, regardless of the... Reyna's involvement, obviously I hope that the legal system does its job and things are carried out in a fair fashion. It's like, how do these situations even arise? So he's just there. This is not something that is isolated to soccer, but it's pervasive in the sport and in all sports that athletes are in a position of power and money and seem to be above the law. And I'm just glad that fans are a little bit more aware of it and get it and go, you know what? Like, I mean, as a Whitecaps season's ticket holder, like if Reyna's back next season, I'm canceling. Like, I don't care what the exact involvement was.
It's
unacceptable. It's completely unacceptable on every level. And unless fans, as they are doing, make that stand, then what are we standing for? I mean, we can talk about your all, your honor, and don't cross the line and whatever else, but, you know, we have to hold our heroes to the highest standards, and it's not just about what they do on the pitch. I mean, everybody hopes that these things aren't true when it's done about a sports hero, but I think we're kind of in a time now where we know it's like this kind of thing does not just happen to a person who's just walking down the street and just randomly gets accused and be like, oh, I didn't know that a young volleyball player got stabbed like 9 times at this party I was at. Like, come on.
I think the one thing that it is important to say, and this is an excuse for no one, is that we've had in the league in the past year a number of cases of domestic violence, and this is beyond the pale. It's obviously a really serious tragedy.
Yeah,
that is slightly different than those other cases. So that's the one thing I would say, is that this is just so difficult to wrap your head around.
I'll say this, the league
just is incredibly sad.
Yeah, it is incredibly sad. And the league is not responsible. The teams are not responsible. They're responsible for responding. And I think that's the time in which hopefully we're finally arriving as a culture where we can go, nobody's saying that, like, the Whitecaps or MLS caused this, or, you know, Houston Dynamo caused this, or whatever. It's to say that a very bare minimum of expectation should be that you lose your status as this lauded sports hero, and that the league actually follows up with what it's talking about. And unfortunately, this has kind of been, and I think a lot of it is awareness, but a banner year for domestic abuse, assault, and now potentially murder. It's up to fans, it's up to the league, it's up to the clubs to learn how to respond. And that can't just be complacency, it can't just be, oh, well, who knows what could have happened, you know, and, like, Reyna is entitled to all the legal rights that are afforded to any individual. However, like, at this point, it's sort of like, really? Is there any doubt that at least something super shady went on, and that in some way people have to be held to account for their actions? And,
I think that it's also incumbent on the media to look at serious issues and talk about them regardless of what. I think the province is doing a good job of keeping updates flowing on this this Reyna case, but not just talking about it whether or not the club wants to talk about it, not just talking about it whether or not, you know, sometimes serious issues can go under the radar because MLS doesn't have the profile that some of the other major leagues have, or because the things happen halfway around the world from where any of the beat reporters are. Like, but it's incumbent as well on the media to make sure that this sort of stuff keeps getting covered.
Absolutely. And again, I want to emphasize, and I hope that most people know, is that, of course, these are allegations. But I hope what's happening is a bit of a sea change in the way in which people understand allegations and understand that we let people off the hook all the time. And certainly with athletes, we've seen that again and again and again. And times are different. I hope they're different. And the thing that to end on, like, a positive note, is that I've been very proud of MLS fans this year for taking a stand against what kind of behavior is acceptable in their teams and what kind of behavior isn't, from their players, from their fans, from every aspect. And it's not being led by the clubs, it's not being led by the league, it's being led from the fans who have dictated what is acceptable behavior and not. And it's not always perfect, but numerous clubs, numerous times this season, have had to make statements, and I feel like it's the fan statements and the supporters club statements that have really had the most impact to say, this is not a thing we're okay with, and we don't care who you are, but how you conduct yourself off the pitch matters just as much, if not more, as on the pitch. And the days of a celebrity sports hero getting free reign is over. And yeah. I think that's an incredibly positive thing. And I can't emphasize enough that that is being led by a players who speak out and fans who speak out.
We have the ability as fans and as observers of this league to determine what kind of space it is.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's great to recognize the people that are making it a positive one.
Absolutely. If we're going to call it the beautiful game, let's keep it the beautiful game.
Absolutely. Is that it for this week? Do we have anything else to go over? I think
that's it. I think my targeted allocation money has run out, and I think the 4.5 hour transfer window has closed. Whatever metaphor you want to apply here, Lord knows, probably by the time we sign off, we'll both check MLSsoccer.com and find a whole bunch of changes and things that have happened since we've been talking. Until then, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at Team Bates on Twitter, www.team-bates.com. You can't buy the fall issue of What a Heller anymore, or of Heller Magazine anymore, but go to whataheller.com and find information about the December one that might be, or I don't know, December, the next one. I don't know anything.
All right, and if you want to engage with us on Twitter, we're at That's So MLS. We'll be following the drafts, the trades, everything that's going on in the off season. Maybe a bit of coverage about things that are going on before the combine, etc. But we'll try to keep you up to date. And I believe, I don't know, I hate to put you on the spot, but we'll keep doing this through the off season, right?
That'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Clearly, there's stuff to talk about.
I would love to try and get some interviews in, too, see what we can get.
Indeed. All right. Well, that concludes this week's show, and I'm sure there'll be lots more trades to talk about soon.
Great review on iTunes.
Yes, please. See? You're the organized one. Rate and review on iTunes, if you didn't hear that. Do that thing, and that will help us out greatly. Happy holidays. Do that whole
happy
thing.
Holidays.
Put your feet up. Watch some soccer. I think there's now we're into the 3-game-a-week Premier League territory. So if that's your jam, watch some soccer. There's always lots of soccer over the holidays. That's the best part.
I'm going to fire up MLS Live and watch some thrilling regular season games.
Oh, dear. Shots fired. Okay, until Christmas Day, don't get sent off.
Don't get sent off.